Now on News Talk, as part of our documentary on News Talk series, we explore the experiences of seven Irish transgender people in their own words, in All Mine.
I'm Noah Halpin, I'm 26, I'm a social care student in ITB and I am a transgender man. I have always known that there was something a little bit different about me ever since I was a small child. I was not into your stereotypical girls' toys or activities. All my friends are boys, it was football at lunchtime. So I always knew there was something different, but I didn't know what it was. Then, you know, you get into secondary school and I was in an all-girls boarding school, which was not the right environment for me. And still I knew there was something different, so I was toying with, am I gay? Am I bisexual? Is that what it is? Until I saw this documentary when I was about 14 or 15 about a young trans girl, and I kind of clicked and realised that there's a name for this, and it's transgender, and that's what I am. But still, I was in this all-girls boarding school, so it wasn't the right time nor place for me to be able to come out, which was really difficult. But eventually, I left school, and I was waiting for the right time. And it wasn't until I was actually, I think it was 24, that I decided to say something and actually come out. And I came out to my friends first, who were brilliant, very, very supportive. And then I kind of slowly began to tell my family, who they kind of chose to ignore it and don't quite know how to deal with it. So it's still kind of an unspoken topic. After coming out, it's like this feeling of euphoria. It's everything's making sense, everything's coming together. And I did everything I could possibly do to present as male. You know, you cut your hair, you go and buy a new wardrobe and all, which, and every little small step felt great. But then you do come to a standstill when you're actually trying to move on with your transition and go from socially to medically. One of the biggest things that trans people face in Ireland is the healthcare system, or lack thereof. So in Ireland currently, there is only two consultants who will prescribe hormone replacement therapy. This is what changes our physical features. This is what makes us appear the gender that we truly are. But in order to even see the endocrinologist to be prescribed HRT, you must have a psychiatric diagnosis. Now, being transgender is nothing to do with psychiatry. In fact, it's been proven the opposite, it's biology. So it's completely unwarranted to have psychiatrists involved in any diagnostic way. But there's only one psychiatrist that the endocrinologist will accept a diagnosis for, despite the fact that they're all qualified to make that diagnosis. The waiting list to see the psychiatrist is over a year long. Following that, it's another 18 months to see the endocrinologist, okay? This is the most traumatic part of transition, is waiting, being told you're going to get an appointment at this time, it being pushed back because clinics are constantly being cancelled and continue to be, and the HSE won't release how many clinics are cancelled either. So this is, and I wouldn't say it lightly, but this is actually killing people. People are committing suicide during this wait. They're excited when they get news of an appointment and let down when it's been pushed back a further 4 months, because this is what we wait for. This is what makes us appear as we know we are. Then in terms of gender reassignment surgeries, there are no surgeons in the entire country that will do gender reassignment surgery, and that's in terms of bottom surgery for both trans men and trans women. There's one who will do top surgery, so for me it will be a double mastectomy. Her waiting list is years long. In the meantime, we've got to do what's called binding. So if you think of a corset for your chest, so we bind every day. It causes problems like cracked ribs, labored breathing, intensifies asthma. I've got a slip disc in my back from binding. It's constantly painful, it's constantly sore, and it cuts under your arms, it cuts around your waist. And the longer we do that, the more irreversible damage is going to be done to our body. Why we do it is because we can't leave the house without it. Mentally, we wouldn't be able to. A lot of us wouldn't. So the wait for top surgery isn't practical, which is why a lot of people are having to go abroad, which is a risk in itself should complications happen, either there or when you get home. So we're completely understaffed in terms of people willing to provide trans healthcare. Even GPs aren't educated. When I went to my GP, I was sent home to do my own research and come back to him, because they simply don't know. They haven't been educated by the HSE what the routes are to take. And even those routes take years and years and years. And like I said, people are dying waiting for this, literally dying waiting for it. The Irish government, well, the HSE in particular, need to move away from the outdated medical diagnostic model, which doesn't exist anymore. It was an old thought, and move on to an informed consent model where self-determination, bodily integrity, this is being rolled out, has been rolled out, and is continuing to be in most developed nations, and we are way, way, way behind. So the diagnostic model needs to go, and an informed consent model with mental health support. And when I say mental health support, I don't mean diagnostics. I mean support throughout transition. That's very important. That would take away waiting lists. Education to GPs. All GPs are qualified to prescribe HRT. So GPs need to be educated on prescribing HRT. That would completely eradicate waiting lists. That's the kind of route we need to be going down. And as well as that, a gender identity clinic set up to deal with gender reassignment surgeries. You know, if I want to get top surgery here, I actually need permission from an endocrinologist. Why? That's not their area. You know, that's not their profession. Like a one-stop shop as such, that all these referrals can happen, would take so much strain off current waiting lists, and it would also take cost of mental health provisions way down. We're constantly made jump through loop after loop. We're made to prove ourselves, to prove that we are trans enough to be treated. And you know, with the diagnostic model, it's essentially being, we have to be given permission to transition, which I don't need permission to do with my body what I want to do or know that I need to do. We still work off a psychiatric diagnostic model here, which is it's just horrible. I'm not a diagnosis.
My name is Alexandra Day. I'm 26 years old. I identify as a trans woman. My pronouns are she and her. Personally, I was really lucky. I was supported by my parents and my family and the majority of my friends. And like, I absolutely recognize my privilege in that. Like, I was really lucky. Not everyone is so lucky. Some people are really out there on their own. Others have some support, but not enough. The biggest barrier to most trans people is the medical system, I would say, the HSE, and the cost of medically transitioning. Also, there's quite a lot of gatekeeping in the HSE as well, and that presents considerable barriers because this, in most cases, these are medical products that the trans people need. They're dealing with quite high levels of dysphoria, and they need this to alleviate that problem, but at the same time, they're being required to jump through hoops by the HSE. There is a lot of unnecessary, like, pushing things back, getting to the end of an appointment where you think you're going to start finally talking about access to HRT, and then being told, like, well, no, we'll review this in 6 months, and that leaves you in limbo again. I don't know, there's something that just doesn't sit right with me about gatekeeping. I think what I would consider, anyway, at least, and I think a lot of trans people would, like, life-saving medications. I know myself personally that I had to go and kind of fight my corner in Loughlinstown, and because it was 3 years since my first appointment and I was not being given access to HRT, and it was having an incredibly tough toll on my mental health at the time. I needed the HRT, and sure enough, as soon as I got access to HRT, like, my mood lifted and I felt so much better. I think that trans people are like everybody else, that we go through the same experiences. Not everything is related to transition. We have our own hardships outside of that. So my message really with that is support trans people. Consider them like you would anyone else. Include them in your lives. Most importantly, if you see trans people or any LGBT people being harassed or anything like that in public, stand up. You know, if you're with a group of people, all of you, just go and stand up against that person. Because the only way that we will stop transphobia is by kind of stamping it out. It's a horrible, it's the same as homophobia. It's like, or racism or any other, any of these issues, not rational. And the only way we can deal with it is to stand opposed against it. Pronouns, to me in particular, like, I understand that people make mistakes. I'm very, like, forgiving in that sense, because I don't want to be, you know, like, have to have an argument with somebody every time that they mess up. And I genuinely understand that, like, most people are not doing it. It's just, yeah, sometimes it might come down to my presentation on the day, or, you know, my voice, because I'm still going through voice training, and sometimes it sounds very masculine if it's tired or anything like that. So to be called like Miss, or to be like she or her, or Alexandra instead of my old name, or male pronouns, is like massively affirming, because it again cements the idea that people are seeing you as you want to be seen. As a binary trans woman, there is nothing that like might pep up a crappy day as being addressed as who I am.
My name is Lee. I am 23 and I'm an agender, non-binary trans person. The correct pronoun for me is they. I feel dysphoria when I feel like I look or am too much like a cis guy or like a cis girl. I tend to veer more towards the masculine because that is kind of just my sense of style. I like a button-up shirt and a floral tie. I suppose the most unusual part about me in terms of the trans community, I suppose, is that I don't live in Dublin or a city. I live on the bog, quite a bit away from it. So a lot of my contact with the trans community is primarily online, mostly with people I've met before at some events. I'm involved in some committee meetings. I'm involved in helping with some meetups. So really activism or volunteering is actually the only way I can get involved with the trans community, which I'm not angry about. I don't like sitting on my arse. I kind of like to get involved and help out if it's the situation. I think Tenny are already doing a good bit about this, trying to get trans support groups in more rural areas. It's just that there's not as many in concentration. There is definitely safety in numbers. So yeah, being at home is a bit difficult. Well, the most difficult thing I think for trans kids is school. An overwhelming amount of schools are all boys, all girls. Now, that is a dangerous situation for a trans kid. And besides for that, I mean, it's all uniforms. The whole uniform aspect and the gendered aspect of school is a huge problem for trans young people. It's such a huge part of their day. Their whole weeks and like entire lives for years are organized around school, around when you're not in school, what you're going to be doing in school. I think it's too big of an area of their life, not to say that it's an important part. I think it's very important to have representation. I'm not represented in the media at all. I think there is one show with a non-binary person in it. That's the importance of representation, especially to young people. If you don't have a map to see what your life is going to be like when you're older, how can you navigate it for yourself? How can you look into the future if there's no pathways for you to follow? If you don't know that, oh, you know, someone already figured out how to do this, maybe let me go along those same lines. It's important to have an imagined future for yourself, and I feel like that's often missing for trans individuals. I've personally never experienced violence. I've known far too many of my friends. I guess I've just been lucky who have experienced violence, who have been cut off from their families. It's not like we can just go back in the closet. It's not like we can hide. That's not going to make anything any better. It's just such a hard thing to go in search of dignity. People say gender identity. It's not an identity. It's who you are. And you're just looking for a way to live. And you're looking for help. And wherever you turn for help, usually it's no. You go to the mental health system, there's such long queues, you can't get help. You go to get help with physical transition, you are sent back to the mental health people who usually will look for any other excuse besides transness for what you're experiencing, what you're feeling. You look to the law. The law is supposed to be a blueprint for what society is and how we treat each other. And it hasn't caught up to respecting us, allowing us a bit of dignity, allowing us to not have to go into a big conversation about why your name is different, why there's an F there when you don't look like an F. It's just an everyday part of life. It's something so basic, it's hard to define. You might as well ask me to explain to you how I breathe. I don't notice it happening, but it's something that happens when I become more conscious of it. It gets in my head a little, so sometimes I have to take a minute and forget about it. Maybe some people, I think all I talk about is being trans. I wish I could just forget about it. But until we have gender recognition, and until we as a society change and adapt, I don't think it's something I can shut up about anytime soon. I want it not to be a fight for my dignity.
My name is Louise Hannan. I'm a photographer and videographer living in Dublin. Where would I start? I suppose I would start when I was about 8 years of age. And I ended up dressing in my mother's clothes. And she found out one day and she went ballistic. Absolutely ballistic. And I never did that again. But it was the start of a journey. And I suppose in those days we didn't have the language to describe who we are. And it took a long time of conforming to society's norms and getting married and doing all those sorts of things before I actually came to the conclusion at some point a few years ago, a long time ago actually, that I had to do something about it. I couldn't live a lie any longer. I can remember April Ashley having she was a transsexual from the UK, having a full page spread in the Sunday News of the World. And I can remember reading it and thinking, oh God, I wouldn't like to be like that. That's terrible. The language they were using was very derogatory. And I was, I suppose, at that stage, I would have been about 16 or 18, maybe slightly younger even. And my father used to get the News of the World every Sunday. And some of the things that were in it about transgender people in those days were absolutely horrendous. So it's quite a big difference between then and now. And even only in the last few years, there was a good friend of mine who was outed in the papers in 2011, completely outed in a very derogatory article. So when it came to my turn, when my case came out in April 2011, I just basically didn't want to talk to the reporter that had spoken to the friend of mine. At the very start of my case was November 2006, when I was working for a transport company. And enjoyed the work, enjoyed the camaraderie with the other employees and everything else. And I told my employer at that point that I wanted to transition, and I didn't think that a transport company would be the best place to do it, given, you know, sort of certain attitudes. So I told him I was leaving in May of the following year. That would have been 2007. And he turned around to me and said, look, I want you to stay. He said, we'll work something out. He said, you're good at what you do. And we'll work something out. So we had a discussion between that and Christmas, and I was to transition under certain conditions, which I was happy enough with. And then coming into March, things hadn't happened, and I had to change my name by deed poll. And I said to the manager, look, I'm going to change my name here. So he said, look, come in on Monday as Louise. So I came in on the Monday as Louise, worked as Louise for the end of the week. And during that period, he said to me, listen, I want you to work on the phones in mail mode until at least Christmas. And I want you to go out and see clients in mail mode. That was the way it had to be. And then a few weeks later, I'm sitting there eating my lunch, and he said to me one day, he says, you don't eat like a woman. And stuff like that. There was kind of derogatory stuff coming through. He would ask me to go over to the photocopier to photocopy a driver's license. And when I'd be standing there, he would say, Louise, go over and do that. And then while I'd be standing there, and there'd be drivers in the reception 3 or 4 feet from me, he would shout over in my male name, and the drivers were then standing looking at me going, what the heck's going on here? So it was quite difficult to actually live in that. Till eventually, one day, the boss said to me, look, he said, we would like you to work from home. There's an atmosphere in the office. And I said, well, like, I don't see the atmosphere, but he insisted. So I worked from home. I found it very difficult to work at home because inside the office, there's a lot of interaction. And I was asking, could I go back into the office the whole time? So the MD said to me, he said, look, I think it's time you should go and get yourself a job. So I went and looked for another job. I felt so let down and hurt and annoyed and upset by the way I was treated. And I always got on well with them to the point where I walked in as Louise, and then it was like a complete sea change. Over the 4 months, I suppose, I kind of came to the conclusion, listen, I'm going to take a case here, because I was so annoyed and upset. And I ended up then with the recession, being out of work for 2.5 years. And then eventually I got a call to go to the tribunal. I was interviewed, I was questioned. It was like the Spanish Inquisition. And I was questioned in a very derogatory way, I thought, and very, very stressful. And then that was in September 2010. And then in April 2011, the judgment was given. The reaction was great. There were 20 pages at one point plus on the internet about the case. And there was one negative reaction, and that was from a local religious institution here in Ireland, which I won't name, but everybody knows who they are. So I was very encouraged by the support that I got. I was interviewed by Pat Kenny. I was interviewed by Matt Cooper. And they were all extremely good about it. Strangely enough, I took the case on the belief that it would encourage employers to take people who transitioned in the workplace more seriously. And I think it did. Some of the large American companies and Ireland corporations, they were ahead of the game anyway. So there was no issue with them. I mean, I went into PayPal at one point, and they were actually asking me how we should deal with transgender people transitioning in the workplace all over Europe. So at that point, it was quite good. But I think the other side of the coin was that the small SMEs with 10, 20 employees, maybe not even that, I think they were reluctant then to maybe consider taking somebody on who was transgender. Some of my transgender friends were saying, look, we're finding it difficult to get a job, and maybe the publicity around the case scared some employers about taking transgender people on. I was on radio, one of the local radio stations, or national radio stations, about a year ago, and I was talking about young people and transitioning and parents with younger children who feel that they're transgender. And generally speaking, when a young person gets to puberty, there may be issues around suicide and things like that. And there was one man on, and I said to him, how many children have you? And he said, I have 2 children. And I said, would you rather have one live child living in the opposite gender or a dead child? Which would you prefer? And he turned around and he said nothing. He had no answer to that. And I know from my perspective, and I have grandchildren, if I had one of them and they were transgender, I wouldn't care as long as they're happy. And that's what matters. It's a very traumatic time, and they need every support from family and friends they can get, because at the end of the day, it's a life or death situation.
You're listening to All Mine on Documentary on News Talk.
My name's Kiva, 33, from kind of a trotted direction, and I'm a trans woman. There's three really simple things just to kind of get your head around. Trans women are women, trans men are men, non-binary and genderqueer people exist. Get over it. That would be the main thing. And if you can get your head around that, particularly if you're a cis man, try to put yourself in our shoes. I'm not a woman trapped in a man's body. If you can imagine being born and you know that you are a woman, or you know that you are a man, imagine what that does in terms of yourself, how you internalize that, how you try and fool yourself into believing that that is the case, how you do everything within your power to live that, and how much that can take a toll on you as a person. And just think about that for a second. I do get a fair amount of harassment on the street, particularly at certain times of the evening when I want to go home. There's been a couple of occasions where I've been ridiculed. I tend to walk around town with headphones on, because otherwise you hear the, "That's a man," or people laughing, or people shouting abuse, or you know, the stares can be unsettling at times. I felt threatened, and I've had abuse shouted in my face. It's usually when I'm alone. I try as much as I can to avoid being alone, but sometimes you just you can't do it all the time. It can knock you for six sometimes. One of the things that I find incredibly difficult, and that rubs up, that I've rubbed up against, and has had a lot of personal impact on me, has been the pathologization of trans people. In order to get access to healthcare, I have to be diagnosed essentially with a mental illness. So I've had a meeting with a clinical psychiatrist, to meet a clinical psychologist as well, and this is just to get healthcare. If you're a woman and you're middle-aged and you're going through the menopause, you go to your GP and he will prescribe hormones. If you're a guy and you have issues with your testosterone, there's no issues there. If you're a woman and your breasts are too large and you're having back pain, you will get healthcare to alleviate that. Whereas with me, I feel like I've been kind of infantilized. I don't have the ability to make decisions for myself. I'm not believed. The way the system is set up, it tries to make it, I feel, as difficult as possible in order to get healthcare. It's had a huge impact on me not getting access to healthcare. And in the last couple of weeks, it all became too much. And I ended up getting very depressed, anxious and stressed. And I've not been in work. I've had to leave work. The health system, which is supposed to ensure that I get the health requirements that I need, has made me sick. The last couple of weeks, I've run out of the ability to deal with it, unfortunately. So that's the kind of impact that it's had on me. But it has impacts across the spectrum in terms of trans people. I have a friend, she came out as trans. She transitioned 20 years ago, and she moved from the US to Ireland, and she ran out of her supplies of estrogen. And when she went to her GP, the GP wouldn't help her and wouldn't prescribe hormones, and basically told her to go through the same hoops that I'm going through, which puts her at risk of, you know, osteoporosis and other health complications because of that. And that's a big reason as well that a lot of trans people are turning to self-medication. There's parallels maybe in terms of abortion rights and things like that, in terms of bodily autonomy. People are getting hormones and blockers and medicating themselves because the health system is so difficult. I had to go to a psychiatrist. I was asked about my sexual history. I was asked if I heard voices in my head. You know, I was asked very personal, invasive questions about my life to prove that I had the capacity to make decisions for myself. It shouldn't be like that. It really shouldn't. I'm not mentally ill. I don't, well, the situation has caused me to become mentally ill. It's a horrible situation to be in this limbo and know that there I have no control over it and there's nothing I can do about it. It's unfortunately come to that point now where it's just, I've lost my capacity to cope.
My name is Aoife and I'm 48 years of age and I work in the tech industry and I'm an out trans woman. Trans is such a huge spectrum. It's such a broad range of people out there. There are people like me who are parents. There are young trans people. I've seen, you know, last a couple of weeks ago, I met some young trans guys and they were lovely, confident, and they were just in a cafe openly discussing trans issues. And it was just wonderful to listen to them. And, you know, there are trans people in their 90s. I read a story last year about a trans woman and she was 93 when she finally came out as trans. It's just a huge spectrum. There are trans people who will take hormones and perhaps have surgery. There are trans people who don't want to take any medication and there are trans people who don't want to have surgery, and that's fine. It's just such a broad spectrum. You know, we're like any sort of walk of life. I'm one of the lucky ones, I think, in that I'm an out trans woman. I work in the tech industry. I'm out in the employment area, so people in my office obviously know I'm trans and they accept me for who I am, but I realise that I'm probably one of the rarities in Ireland. It's very difficult for trans people to come out, either in the workplace or even personally. I think trans people stay in the closet a lot of the time because I think a lot of employers probably don't understand what it's like to be trans, and you know, they're afraid to come out, and I think that can be very, very difficult for them. You know, they can't be themselves. And, you know, like I had to do, I had to pretend I was somebody else for years before I had the courage to actually come out and tell my employers that I was trans and that I wished to transition within the workplace. The first person I spoke to was my my HR manager, and at this point I had been working for the company about 4.5 years, so obviously this came as quite a surprise to her and everybody else who knew. And, you know, when I first approached her about it, you know, she was quite open and honest with me that she didn't know what to do. She didn't know what our policies were or even if we had any policies around this area. So what she said to me was that, well, you know, we'll deal with this. We'll work on this, and she would get back to me. But that she would also be led by, you know, what I wanted and what, you know, that I would be the one to help educate her as well. So we met every week and we sort of worked out a journey or a roadmap as to how this transition would take place. So, you know, there's the issues like, you know, name changes, changing email addresses, changing badges. Who do we tell? When do we tell them? All the sort of things, bathroom access, you know, all these things are cropped up that we had to work out before the actual date of my transition. Like, one of the things we did was that before I returned to the workplace as Aoife, I met a couple of close colleagues along with my HR manager outside of the workplace. We just went for coffee so I could sort of introduce Aoife to them and to make it less sort of formal and structured. And, you know, that was a really, really good icebreaker, I think, you know. The day I returned to work as Aoife, obviously I was very, very nervous, and I'd got into the office really early. I was in there at 7 o'clock and just sort of hid behind my computer monitor. But what made that day stand out for me was, you know, a few people come over and wished me luck and all of that. But my HR manager had arranged a bunch of flowers and a card for me, and that said, you know, welcome back to work, and that acceptance matters to us, you know. And it was, you know, it was A, the first time I'd received a bunch of flowers, but B, it was just such a lovely human thing, and it's something I was totally not expecting, and it really, really, really touched me, and it meant the world to me. And it just meant I felt it meant that, you know, here I was finally, I have finally got some acceptance here, you know, and I'm finally allowed to be who I am. And it was just such a nice thing, you know. That was really, really beautiful. It's difficult to be trans. It's a very difficult space to be in. We're not here to sort of take spaces that are there for cisgender women. We're not here. We're not trying to infiltrate anywhere. We're just trying to be ourselves. So please listen. You know somebody who's trans in your life. If you have a child, a brother, a sister, anybody, just listen to them and support them. Because the suicide rate in the trans community is much, much higher than within the general population. It's well over 50%. And the majority of the reasons for that is because there's just no support there. People are rejected by their families. They're rejected by their parents. They're rejected by their loved ones. They're rejected by their children. And it's a very, very lonely place to be. We've come a long, long way. But we have problems accessing healthcare in this country. There's a huge bottleneck. There's basically two places in Ireland where you can access healthcare. It's Loughlinstown or Galway. And, you know, when I first went to my GP and told her I was trans, you know, straight away she knew to refer me to Loughlinstown. And I suspect that I'm lucky that my GP knew straight away where to refer me. I suspect there are GPs up and down the country who won't do that, or who don't know that that's where you need to go, or who might not accept that you are trans. I was waiting on a waiting list for a year before I was finally seen, and even then I was referred to a psychiatrist to prove that I was transgender, and then referred back to Loughlinstown, and it was only then that I was finally put on the medical treatment that I need, like hormone blockers and hormones. So it's a big, big issue. We are sort of shoehorned into these two places, whereas there's nothing that could prevent sort of GPs from prescribing hormones. There's no legislation there that prevents it. It's just that GPs are too scared to. I think we need to give GPs that power. And, you know, I think there are plenty of trans people who would sign a waiver saying, yes, I know what I'm doing here. I'm transgender. I accept that there are side effects from these hormone treatments. But, you know, I will sign this piece of paper if you will prescribe the treatment. So I think we need to get to a space where GPs feel comfortable prescribing the treatment that we need. Mental health-wise, I think, you know, when I look on Twitter, I see a lot of young trans people who hate being trans because it's just such a difficult thing to be. Even for me, sometimes it's difficult. You know, I'm out and I'm proud to be trans, but there are days where I go, oh, I cannot do this. You know, it's just so, so difficult. For a trans person to step out the door is a huge act of bravery. You have to, you know, there are days when I have to take a deep breath and steel myself before stepping out the door myself. You know, I've been in counselling for a couple of years, just talking through stuff, you know, and it's just, it's difficult. And I can't say it's not, but it's also, I wouldn't change it. If somebody offered me, you know, Matrix style and said that if I give you this pill, you'll wake up tomorrow and you will be a cisgender man and you'll never ever have to worry about being trans or never think about being trans, would you take the pill? And I'd say no, because I'm proud to be trans. It's taken a long time to get there. I've fought a huge battle to get here, and I wouldn't change that, you know, not after everything I've gone through.
I'm Jason. I am 18, in sixth year. I like CrossFit. I like solving Rubik's Cubes. I play video games. I use he, him pronouns. I'm a trans man. I started to like realize that I was trans when I was like 13, turning 14-ish. It was difficult. I started like by telling my friends and stuff, and my friends were all very like supportive and open, and that was really good. But obviously, quickly enough, I realized that like I wasn't going to feel an improvement in my life unless I started to, you know, tell more people. I was just terrified of what would come next. Eventually, I came out to my parents a few months afterwards when I was 14. They were very supportive, and, you know, like any coming out situation, there's a bit of an adjustment period, but they were really supportive, and I did kind of throw them in the deep end a bit because I am like an overly prepared person. So I decided to come out to them, and then I like made a PowerPoint presentation about all the stuff they needed to know, which probably scared them and made things worse, but it worked out in the end. A few months later, I was going into third year and I decided that I wanted to come out in school. And I was really surprised when I asked my parents about it because I was expecting resistance. I don't know why. They were supportive. I was just expecting them to be resistant to the idea because, you know, parents, they're protective. They don't want you to make mistakes. I was expecting them to have some kind of a resistance to it, but they didn't. And when I went into third year, I came out as a trans man. It went fine. It wasn't like a horrible experience that a lot of other people have had. It wasn't perfect, and there have been like some negative experiences here and there. And my mom, like, I go home and complain to my mom. My mom has always been very understanding of the fact that, like, I would come home and I would tell her these things, but I would refuse to let her do anything about it because I didn't want my mom going in and defending me. You know, I was 16. I didn't want my mommy taking care of me like that, you know? But that, like, I would just come home and complain about these things that had really upset me that had happened in school, and that she would just sit there and listen and deal with the fact that I was upset and she couldn't do anything about it, which I can't imagine being easy for my mom, but I was glad that she did it because I don't think it would have helped had she stormed into the school being all angry at them. Now, granted, at times when I said, please do something about this, she did something, which I'm really lucky that I had as well. I consider myself to be really lucky. I've had, in the grand scheme of things, a relatively smooth experience since I came out, and even when I was discovering that I was trans, I had a relatively straightforward experience, which is not the norm for most people. This is not a normal experience. This is an exceptionally good one. But that even when you are in that position and you have everything you could possibly need and everything goes right for you, you are still going to be affected by all of these really negative articles that are out there about trans people, especially because so often they like to target trans young people. They like to say that trans young people are too young to know that they're trans. They like to say that stuff like trans teenagers being provided with hormone blockers is like appalling, and that it's like going to harm kids, even when, you know, they're not medical doctors. They're just people with opinions who don't like that trans young people get to be happy and that trans young people get supported. These portrayals of like trans young people, these stories about trans young people, are really hurtful to trans young people themselves and add an extra bit to the pot of the potentially making parents unsupportive. You know, if all parents ever see about trans young people is all of these things about how trans young people aren't old enough to know that they're trans, or that, like, you know, hormone blockers are going to kill your kid and rubbish like that, you know, if that's all parents ever see, they're not going to want to support their trans kids because they're not going to think that their kid being trans is real. They're not going to think it's legitimate. And if seeing those stories can upset me, who has a really supportive background, who has like a good mental health outlook, who's had a relatively smooth time transitioning, how harmful are they going to be to a trans young person who's younger, whose parents are unsupportive or even abusive, who have like no concept of what their future is going to be like because they don't feel like they have one? How much more upsetting is that story going to be to them than it is to me? No one benefits from a story saying that trans young people aren't legitimate for whatever reason. No one benefits from that. You know, it only causes harm to other people, especially when it's like done in such bad faith half the time, that this is not what like prevailing medical thought is, and that like this is not what professionals think. It's sad to see people acting like those young people are not young people, that they are people too, and that they can also be trans, and that that lack of support has such a profound impact on your life. It's not even something where you have to think about what the potential mental health impact is on trans young people when they don't have support, because people have done research on it before. There is statistics out there comparing certain things that occur when a trans young person has supportive parents and when they have unsupportive parents. Like trans young people having a 4% suicide rate when their parents were supportive and having a 59% suicide rate when their parents weren't. there's such a stark contrast between what it's going to be like for you if your parents are supportive or if they're not. My parents were never at any point unsupportive, and I still felt an impact on my mental health from being trans. You have to deal with the mental health effects of being a trans person, full stop. If you're uncomfortable with your body, then that's obviously going to have an effect. If you feel bad about how you look or how you don't pass as male or whatever, if you have all of these like negative feelings stemming from being trans, and then they're added to by the fact that, like, okay, you're a young person, so even if you wanted to, maybe you can't access the things that you need. And then adding on to that, that your parents aren't sympathetic to the fact that you're going through this and that this is a problem for you, that's just heartbreaking.
All Mine was produced by Maurice Kelleher and Sean O'Boyle and was supported by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland. Information and support for the issues raised in this programme can be found by contacting the Transgender Equality Network Ireland at tnei.ie and the National LGBT Helpline at lgbt.ie.